your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here on Sunday morning wake-up call. It is the first of summer, and I hope if you didn't notice it by the warm, humid weather, I did because I had lightning bugs outside my doors last night. So lightning bugs and honeysuckle for me, always good reminders of an otherwise hot and humid time in my life. All right, so again, thank you for tuning in. It's always nice to have folks listening. I truly think that those of you ready for summertime or just being looking for a new challenge in your life, this is the show for you. We're going to be talking about reading, summer reading, some books to choose from, things that you may have forgotten, things that are maybe just a little easy to take you through that the days with the kids or the, you know, I have a sister who's a teacher. She's always looking for that easy Sue Grafton kind of stuff. We'll mention both the difficult, the challenging, the fun, the often overlooked, and the easy cheesy stuff. So stay tuned. Our guest today, Sandy McAdams from Daedalus Books. Sandy, you with me?
Right here.
We also have Lindsay Idison. Lindsay?
I'm here.
And over stuck in the corner, Meredith Dickens.
Good morning.
Weren't you stuck in the corner last time?
I guess I spend my time in the corner.
Is that how you become a librarian?
Misbehaving and being sent to the corner?
Lindsay is the branch manager at Northside Library, Meredith from Gordon Avenue Library, and Sandy McAdams from, people should at least be familiar with the name. If you haven't been in, you need to take the challenge of Daedalus Books. Bookshop, I believe, is the proper term. Daedalus Bookshop, off the downtown mall. I was listening to the podcast from last year, Sandy, and we sort of together taunted people who haven't been in the shop yet. Sort of a haunted house of books, with books on every wall, every stairwell, three floors now. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. I should say the only reason I came to Charlottesville was someone in Washington, a friend of a friend, sent me a picture of the building that the bookshop's housed in. And I knew nothing about Charlottesville, but as soon as I saw the building, I thought, that is a used bookshop. So down I came, and sadly, I guess, I didn't even know there was a university here, being from the north. And it's turned out, because it's with three floors, there's lots and lots of rooms, even on the stairwell.
Sandy McAdams, Daedalus, used books. Lindsay Idison, Meredith Dickens here. We are going to talk about books, bookshop, things to read, etc. So get your pen and paper. I'm going to ask the three guests that if you start mentioning specific books for various recommendations or things that you've enjoyed, please remember to toss out the title of the book, but also the author of the book, and maybe do so as you begin and as you finish, so that someone who's caught, whose interest you've caught, has a chance to write that information down. And before we begin, I need to thank Lynchburg's 89.9 listeners for being here, as well as the folks from Dixon Disposal for supporting us. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com. That's 978-2111. We'll start with ladies first. We'll start in the corner. Meredith Dickens, Gordon Avenue Library branch manager. What are you reading today?
I was just saying in the lobby beforehand that I was dreading this question because I don't have a stellar thing to pull out of my pocket. I'm in the middle of Man Seeks God, I think is the title, by Eric Weiner. Is that right, Lindsay? And I'm in the middle of that. He's a great nonfiction writer. He did the Quest for Happiness. What was
Geography of Bliss.
Geography of Bliss. And this is his next one. He's sort of shopping around for a religion, and he's got a great tone and a sense of humor, but also has some really interesting observations on the various religious communities he's visiting.
Now, that sounds like it could be fiction or nonfiction.
It could
be.
This is nonfiction. It's his personal quest. He actually did travel around, and it's nonfiction.
Lindsay?
I am also reading Man Seeks God. I guess brilliant minds think alike.
Co-workers passing along interesting reads and suggestions for one another?
Meredith and I do read some of the same things. I read Turn Right at Machu Picchu, which Meredith book talked at a meeting we were at, by Mark Adams, which is a nonfiction book about Mark Adams' attempt to recreate Homer Bingham's discovery of Machu Picchu.
That was great. Very good, yes.
If you like adventure, travel, Indiana Jones-ish kinds of adventures.
And Sandy?
I'm in a book club which we've had for about a year. Three of my oldest friends, 30 years worth, said, why don't we start a book club, but you'll have to choose all the books. So, never being shy, I said, no problem. So we've done a bunch, and currently we're reading one of my favorite books is David Copperfield. It's delighting me again, and they hadn't read it before, and it's delighting them. And they're just about to meet Miss Havisham and Mr. Dick, and which is a highlight in world literature, I think.
You always seem to, and again, floating back to last year, a lot of the more classic, unknown books, is that from running the bookshop?
I think being around them, and I have to say I have a very, very strong, not surprising for me, opinion that you can never say, if someone says, what about that book? Well, it's a good book. Well, I have no idea what that means. If you mean, I like that book, I don't like that book, I understand that. But to say it's good, I have no conception of what that means. I want you to read something because you love reading it. So, read on, I say, whether it's Stephen King or Marcel Proust, and don't be bored. We've done 6 books in the book club. And then I brought in that list that I gave you, and those are all books that I think people should at least know about.
Yeah, and we're going to go through this a little bit later in the hour. Handful of books, and I'm not sure the best way to handle it, but in some manner, I will get these up on the podcast, which we should be posting on sevillepodcast.com.
Wait a minute.
Is that not good?
You better not do that. If they want a copy, they can come into my bookshop and I'll give them one.
Is that the way to do it?
Yeah, that's the best way, because this is not for wide distribution. This is for book heaven.
So a way to get a copy of the list, some of which will be mentioning many of the names, titles, and authors, is to go to Daedalus Books, just off the downtown mall, where you can find Sandy McAdams. What days of the week are you there, by the way?
I'm there Monday through Thursday, but we're open every day. But they have to come Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, but put your comfortable shoes on and and maybe your sweatpants, because you're going to break a sweat trying to find your way around all the books. So let's jump back into the summer reading, and we'll get back to Daedalus Books and the wide number of authors on this list. When I think of summer reading, I always think of cheesy stuff, and I think I mentioned Sue Grafton right away, because when I go to the beach with the family, it seems that my sisters always have, like, the latest copy of, P equals Purple Death or whatever, and I'm unfamiliar with the titles, but I realize that that's the format that she uses. Are there some top 25 books, bestsellers, that anyone would recommend as, I loved this, you might love it also?
I can think of one really fun summer read. I'm not sure, it wasn't the top 25 bestseller, but I've been a fan of Lisa Lutz. She writes the Spellman Files series, and I think it was late last year, she came out with David Hayward, Heads You Lose. It was a fantastically fun read. It'd be perfect for summer. They co-wrote it. They took turns writing the chapters, and they didn't talk about where the book was going to go. So you have a madcap sort of mystery that they're writing, but in the footnotes you have the conversation between the two authors who, at least in the book, are ex-partners. So they have ribbing between the two as well. So you've got the two stories. I found it absolutely hilarious, and I think it'd be a great beach read.
Lindsay?
I can recommend The Informationist by Taylor Stevens. It's the first in what's going to be a series, and it's a thriller, really can't put downable, but a woman is the main character, and she can kill people with her bare hands.
And apparently that's an important beach format that you need, especially, you know, if you have the kids and your husband can only come down for part of it, you need to have the woman who can strangle. Sandy, how about for you?
I can only give the opposite. I'll tell you a book not to take. When I was released from Vanderbilt in 1962, but accepted by NYU, I spent 6 months in Provincetown. In the old days, it wasn't so much gay, as there were a lot more hippies. And they would come to the beach with their naked children and two volumes of Marcel Proust. And they would bring the Marcel Proust time after time after year after year. And they'd have to read the first volume again to catch up. But they never got any further. So don't bring Proust.
Well, good advice. Let's talk about sort of the classics for a moment. And we can do this in a variety of ways. One of the things you talk about, the reader being unable to finish that part. I go back to my high school days and feel like that these classics were always tossed at me that I didn't particularly get into and I didn't care for. Fortunately, I guess I was raised in a family that enjoyed reading. I saw my parents reading all the time. I was allowed to go to the bookstore and find books that caught my attention. And so even as a child, I had a wall and multiple shelves of books, but that's not true for everyone. And it seems that in school system today, certainly with some teachers and in some school systems, we're almost damning the reading interest of the younger kids by forcing them to read things that are difficult to read. Do we accept the fact that you need to be exposed to the classics, even if you read it with the help of, what are the yellow cheat books called?
Cliff Notes.
The Cliff Notes, even if you only read it with the Cliff Notes, or do we find different style books that may not qualify on the classic shelf and catch the interest of the high school and middle school kids with that?
I think that it's important to introduce high school students to classics. And I realize sometimes that they're not at the right age or level of maturity to wholly appreciate it. But the introduction is a chance to, A, introduce them to great literature and great writing, and B, introduce them to the concept that there's something deeper in it. It's not a quick read. It's not a thriller. It's something that has themes. It's something that has beautiful language. And it's something you have to learn how to read. So I say introduce them at the high school level with the idea that you'll go back to them as an adult when you bring your own maturity and experiences to it, and frequently you get more out of it.
Is that all we ask the high school kids to read, is classic after classic after classic, or do we throw in some of the easier reads as well?
I think they do throw in other things today. I don't think it's all classics.
Sandy, your thoughts on the topic?
I think more high school students have been dissuaded from reading for the rest of their lives because they were made to read George Eliot's Silas Marner. that would just break anyone's heart.
I have to agree.
Yeah.
But Middlemarch is a great book.
Well, maybe, but not for someone who's 14. If you want to start him, you got to get him started right away. My daughter, I don't think until she was 20 read any book that I recommended, but she read all Stephen King over and over. and her vocabulary at 13 was astounding. And she read everything she could get her hands on, just because she had that first experience. I taught it when I used to teach school. I taught a class, and we read On the Road. And they could not get enough books after that. They thought everything was going to be On the Road.
Kerouac?
Yeah, and I would obviously, I don't live in a paradise, so I know that Charlottesville school systems would have heart attack if they read On the Road, because they're smoking dope and doing other stuff. But there are lots and lots of books that you can introduce like that. To Kill a Mockingbird, I mean, is the simplest one. Every person I know has read that book and loved it. And that's a start, and it's very literate. And there are many, many other books that you can show them and say, by God, this is wonderful. Don't read a Hemingway novel, read a Hemingway short story. You've got to think about what's going to get them going, and there are lots of books that will do that. And then when they're in college, if they are, or if they're just smart, they'll go to the library and read the stuff that'll get them going even further.
Meredith, I guess whether it's true or not, when actually now that I realize that Lindsay's at, I always want to call it Northridge, but it's North Side, whether you're North Side, when I think about Gordon Avenue, for some reason I gave you, maybe it's because you have a kid's reading circle, is that right?
Well, all of our libraries have children's rooms or children's areas, and we've all got story times. But
for some reason, I seem to associate the younger crowd with Gordon Avenue, and I don't know why, because even though I've been in North Side, I realize that it has a huge children's area as well. So, but back to you, Meredith, mm-hmm. Are there sort of ground zero books for different age groups to catch their attention, whether they're young elementary school, whether they're on the brink of elementary going into middle school, et cetera? Are there, you know, do you have suggested books that can catch the original attention and have them become readers for life?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are certain books that we tend to go back to a lot when we suggest that they, because they have a universal appeal, there is something about a specific book which makes it a classic that draws in a wide range of readers. But at the same time, when we're recommending books to inspire and excite young readers, we always have to cater it to that child. They're going to have their own interests, and they're going to bring their own thoughts to the book, so that we want to find the book that's right for them. If we do try and force, well, everybody likes Harry Potter, so you're going to have to like Harry Potter, that's going to turn them off more quickly than, you know, finding the right book for them.
Lindsay, how do you find the right book for a kid? It almost sounds like going into the, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but going into the doctor's office and being, you know, giving your notes to the doctor and the nurse so that they can identify what your specific health need is, and you're talking about it in a way that's more literal, actually.
Well, it's a little bit analytical, but not medicinal. We talk to the child and to the parent, and one of the basic questions we ask is, tell me a book that you've read that you've really enjoyed. And once they tell us something that they like, it gives us clues as to other things they may like from similar authors.
I'm not a reader, and so now I'm 10, and my mother's telling me that I have to have a book, you know, and I really haven't read any books. You know, I liked Cal Jumped Over the Moon when I was, you know, little, and my mom would read that to me, but, you know, I don't read. It's stupid.
Well, then we whip out stuff that we know kids like the Origami Yoda series by Engelberger, Diary of a Wimpy
Origami
Kid.
Yoda.
Yes, Origami Yoda. He it's a middle school age crowd, and one of the kids who's sort of not popular comes to school one day with an Origami Yoda figure on his finger, and this becomes the person that all the other kids ask to solve their problems. They go to Origami Yoda, and the problems range from interesting and sort of sad to hilarious. And 10, 11, 12-year-olds have really enjoyed it.
Sandy, does Daedalus Books have you know, used books of the more popular type? Because what I envision when I go to Daedalus Books is I'm not looking for a specific title of a used copy of Origami Yoda. I'm looking for copies that have been out of print for a while. I'm looking for something to jump out at me, not looking for something specific.
Yeah, we have all kinds, and it doesn't matter to me whether it's a classic or a popular novel, if the long as people enjoy it. And from that, I have to translate it in, what can I sell? So if I can sell, who do we sell a lot of? A guy named Griffin. Now, normally, I wouldn't think that would be on our shelves, but we sell a lot of them, so we keep them in hardback. On the other hand, we have all kinds of other people. The problem with the most popular stuff is you can't keep it in stock in a used bookstore because it's not as though we order them. And the people selling us books, people call me up and say, are you buying books? I say, sure. I said, but it'll be difficult. A lot of times we don't buy any books from the boxes that are brought in. However, if you happen to have 100 Ernest Hemingway novels, or 100 Jack Kerouac novels, or 100 Bukowski novels, or 100 William Burroughs, unfortunately, novels, bring them in, because we'll pay good money and we'll buy them all.
Well, how do you say unfortunately for William Burroughs?
Oh, the guy wasn't very good at it, and he used other people's ideas, and he just wasn't good at it. So like,
but he's a good character.
He's a great character. If you shoot your wife in the head, that was his starting point.
He's a good life character, not necessarily.
He is, but he had money from Burroughs adding machines and went around the earth kissing young boys. And, I mean, that's not a good recommendation for a book.
11:23 in the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, that's Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Bookshop. We also have Meredith Dickens. She's the branch manager for Gordon Avenue Library, and Lindsay Idison from Northside Library. This is the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, 20% chance of showers over in the valley, highs in the upper 80s. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Again, small chance of showers in the valley, lows in the upper 60s. And then tomorrow on Memorial Day, mostly sunny. Again, a slight chance of showers. Highs, though, 85 to 90. Right now, it's a beautiful day outside, 82 in the valley, 78 in Lynchburg, 78 in Richmond, a little warmer, and 82 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support as well. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. You're welcome to call and ask a question about summer reading of any type. Make a comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is our toll-free number. But certainly, if you keep listening, we're going to have lots of suggestions on good books of all genres, fiction, nonfiction. One of the things I was talking to Meredith about beforehand that she mentioned, she got me interested in a whole style of books when we did this last summer, the young adult books. So let's jump to that real quick, because The Hunger Games obviously falls into this fantasy of the, I guess, where the hero or heroine is of the teenage age. It's not a vampire or a Dracula or werewolf style book that has also been part of it all in recent years. And then the movie comes out. And so there must be a whole range of books where you can, to either the reader or the parent or whomever says, oh, this, you know, take this on next. It's recommended as the next Hunger Games.
Yes, definitely. Just as after Twilight hit, it was all vampires. Now Hunger Games has hit, and it's all dystopian YA novels. And there are a lot of good ones in there. They're not all copycats. I think one of the good things to move on from Hunger Games would be Kristen Cashore's Graceling trilogy. The third one is coming, Bitter Blue is coming out this summer. But you can start with the first one, which is Graceling. It's also got a strong female lead, action, a little bit of fantasy. That's a good one to follow up with. Lindsay, do you have any other suggestions?
I do. I liked Legend by Marie Lu. And I think it's the beginning of a series, but I'm not positive. It just came out this year. And I just started reading Divergent by Veronica Roth.
I read that, and again, a lot of it falls back to Meredith sort of catching my attention last summer when we did this, is I read Veronica Roth's Divergent, and another one that I read is by Lisa Price, and that's Lisa with two S's, called Starters. Again, mm-hmm. sort of the dystopian world with a young female heroine that I found to be very fascinating, that being, a post- apocalyptic set where everyone is either a teenage or younger or very old, because in this world, obviously, a human can live up to 200 years old. So everyone is a young teen or they are, 90 or older, and everyone in between is has been killed. And I found that to be a really interesting read. Do you have anything at Daedalus, Sandy, where I would think that people have been coming in looking for used copies of Hunger Games? Do you turn someone into a specific room or aisle or area in Daedalus with suggestions as to what to read?
Oh, sure. We have a kids section. We have a sci-fi fantasy section. We have, it must be 50 different sections for 100,000 books. I think the problem is... when they come out, particularly new, we've yet to have a copy of The Hunger Games in our shop because either they're passing them on or keeping them or doing something. The problem, too, for fantasy and science fiction, I had to get over a huge, huge prejudice against that genre of book for two reasons, and I'll make it short, hopefully. An older woman I dated had left her husband to see me because she found a stash of science fiction fantasies in the bottom of his closet. That was one. And secondly, I met a number of younger girls who read science fiction, and they frightened me. So I vowed that if I knew any woman over 15 still reading science and fantasy, I would not marry them.
But there are some classics that were fallen into that. I mean, I think it's the recent, I don't know what, maybe 50 years? I can't keep track of time anymore. A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, absolutely.
They just celebrated a huge anniversary.
Absolutely. And there are lots. There's Orson Scott Card and Philip K. Dick. This was my prejudice. It was completely wrong. But I would like a little sympathy and, some acknowledgement that I'm working this through.
And what's the young woman who helps you in the bookshop?
How old is she?
Well, no, not how old is she. What's her name?
There's a woman who comes in and volunteers with me, Patty Myatt.
And so should I go in and when Patty's there, maybe talk about that topic and go in on one of your off days?
Yes, absolutely. Or when Amanda's there. Amanda's smarter than I am, and she's read a lot of books.
Meredith, were you going to toss something in?
Well, I would recommend that Sandy pick up World War Z by Max Brooks, if you haven't encountered it already. It's going to get a lot of press later this year because the movie is coming out. But it's several years old now, and it's become a classic of, if you can call it that, of the zombie genre, if the word zombie doesn't turn you off completely. But he's a great example of how a science fiction story, because it involves zombies, can really have interesting things to say about our world and engage an intelligent mind. World War Z is the oral history of the zombie wars. So it takes place after the zombie infestation of the world, and it's a series of interviews of people who were involved in eradicating Zed, and but he uses it as a way to talk about the current geopolitical state of the world, globalization and technology, and how we as a nation deal with other nations. But it's also just really fun.
And that book again?
That's World War Z by Max Brooks.
All right. I'm sure we'll end up coming back to that specific genre because, again, that's what I've been reading, thanks to Meredith, for the past year, pretty much. And, Sandy, I'm going to go to you. You said that you have a book club. I would assume that you ladies do as well, whether you participate in them through work or outside of work. I'm looking for some suggestions for book club. I was telling somebody a specific book I was reading, Shades of Grey, and said, oh, 50 Great Shades of Grey, everybody's reading that. I'm like, no.
Was this the Jasper Ford?
It was, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But are there suggestions for book clubs?
There are books of suggestions for book clubs and websites of suggestions for book clubs. And on our website, the library's website, that is, there are lists of what the book clubs in the Jefferson-Madison Regional Library System have read. So there are lots of places to go for suggestions.
And at Dedalus, you can go in and talk to the owner or his assistants about book club suggestions. Sandy, what's yours?
The first one we read, I passed on to my wife, who has a book club, and she passed it on to someone who moved from Keswick to West Virginia and had a book club. And all those two book clubs read this book. It is just wonderful. It's as though it's a 108-page poem. It's called, and a lot of people have read it already know, C.L. Carr's A Month in the Country.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah.
I've one of the few books I've read twice. And it's just gorgeous. And so you just can't stop talking about it.
And once again, that book?
C.L. Carr, A Month in the Country.
J.L. Carr, possibly.
J.L. Carr, sorry. Yes, thank you. Thank God someone...
A Month in the Country by Carr.
Yep.
Is that Carr with two R's or one?
Two R's.
All right. Get your pen and paper out there, folks. And Sean McCord is here today, and I've asked him to include some links on the podcast site to a handful of the books that we're mentioning, but obviously you can't do them all. You can go back and listen to the podcast for this as well. Lindsay Idison from Northside... Library.
I was going to recommend a book that I always recommend to book clubs, which is A Summons to Memphis by Peter Taylor. And that is a very evocative book about going home again as an adult. And I think for adult book clubs, it really allows there to be a really full and rich discussion about those feelings.
Couldn't agree more.
Meredith?
I'm not sure if I can come up with something. I am not part of a book club. I haven't found one that I fit in with yet.
What should a book club be about? I mean, whether you're participating in one now, I'm sure that there are many people who do and love the book club they're in, and some are in book clubs that maybe they feel like they haven't fit in, or they want to start one with their friends and neighbors. Well, how do you make a good book club or find one?
That's a good question. I know that there are some book clubs that are dedicated to reading the classics or reading books that they always felt they should. And so I think definitely going through a list of the books you should have read with another group of people that they can, you know, follow you along the journey, that's a great idea. I found that many book clubs don't end up talking about the book, so I would love to find one that actually does talk about the book.
And the library system has book clubs in each branch, almost every branch, mm-hmm. that is. And we have one that meets on Wednesday nights once a month at Northside. And they select the books themselves.
All I've tried to do with ours, because I'm the guy who picks them, is gets things from various fields. We did read the Carr book, and then we read Othello. And now we're reading David Copperfield. And then we also read my favorite James book, not my favorite, but up there, The Aspirin Papers. So we're trying to read divergent things that people will grab onto. And so far, these guys are all smart, so they get it.
Sandy, back to you. You seems like, you know, we talk about some things that you read earlier in life that maybe are a little too too early for you at that time. I want to talk about some books that for someone looking for something to read this summer, not completely. It's no Marcel Proust to get caught up in, but it might be something that you read earlier or and want to go back to and read again that's somewhat on the summer reading size because of its simplicity, at least in length, and you might understand its meaning a little more. And some of the things that I wrote down are like Lord of the Flies, Animal Farm, Fahrenheit 451, that you might find on the classic shelf, but not in its 800 pages.
Sure, sure.
Do any of you have suggestions that might fall into that?
Yeah, you have to sit down and think about it for a while.
Well, how about on your list here? Are there things that...
Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. That's the novel. Someone said that it's the only novel they could think of that he wouldn't change one word. It's just beautifully done, and I think you could read Salinger's short stories. People have called for Esme with Love and Squalor, their favorite short story of all time. But it's very, very readable, and you just can't get over it. Perfect Day for Banana Fish is another wonderful Salinger story. You could just go on and on, but those are modern classics that you couldn't put down.
Lindsay?
If one of the listeners likes mysteries, I would recommend The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins, which I read for the first time this past year, and is considered one of the first detective novels from 19th century literature, and it was really good.
Spell the author's name for me.
Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S. First name is Wilkie.
Good friend of Dickens.
And it's a good year to read Dickens. Earlier in this year, there was a lot of press. It's his 200th birth anniversary. So if you haven't picked up Dickens in a while, my last name notwithstanding, it's a good year to do it. There's a lot about Uncle Charlie around.
But do you start with, and Sandy, you mentioned some short stories, especially for some of the more what. Some people, including myself, might say difficult authors to get into. Do you start with the short stories?
I just think some people are much better at it. I mean, if you started with D.H. Lawrence, for instance, I found his novel, he just wasn't nearly as in control of his novels as he was with his short stories. So if you read something like The Fox or The Man Who Died, I don't think you'll be able to put them down, and that'll lead you on to other things. A lot of the big guys, it's a little harder to find short stuff, but James is a perfect one. Once you read the Aspirin Papers, I'm sure you'll want to go on and read Portrait of a Lady. And that, there's no one better.
11:39 on the Wake Up Call, talking about books, suggested books to read, whether you read them in the past, whether you just want to pick them up for the first time in the future. Our guests today, Lindsay Idison, Meredith Dickens, and Sandy McAdams.
I should add an addendum for recommendations, by the way. There was a guy who was a nurse, lived over on the Locust, and he came in and he could not find anything to read. He was at his wit's end, and he was probably in his 30s. And he came in, and I'm going to forget the title of this, but not Pat Conroy, but Frank Conroy, who wrote some autobiographical things called Stop Time, etc. But he wrote one novel, and I would recommend that for summer reading. It's delightful. Do you guys know the name of that? Anyway, it's a wonderful novel, and I recommended it to him, and he came back a few days later and came in and looked at me as though I'd... with a second coming, and he had never, ever, ever read such a book. I was a genius. How did I do it? How did I know it? Ah, la, la. And then I kept recommending books. I think I recommended 12, all of which he despised. He just hated them.
You lost your mojo real quick.
And something happened, and it was horrible. So recommendations, you have to be careful.
All right, 11:40 on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And The Hook's Summer Guide offers ideas for both the death-defying and the cautious, from berry picking to skinny dipping to staking out a hot spot to watch the sunset. There's a follow-up on last week's talk of the tow truck. Charlottesville City Council takes a vote. And just as summer travel was about to begin, one of Virginia's most trip-worthy attractions has been destroyed by fire. The Hook. Read all about it every week. And today's programming on WNRN brought to you by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. You can come into Blue Ridge now to check out a selection of kayaks, canoes, and stand-up paddle boards. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville at two locations in Richmond. For more store information online, it's brms.com. And at noon, Les Temps Perdue will be here. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music, playing roots of alternative, because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where you've been. Enjoy the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue, only on WNRN. All right, back with our guests today, Meredith Dickens and Lindsay Idison from Jefferson Madison Regional Library, Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Books, just off Charlottesville's downtown mall. Quick question, which I'm sure could go longer. Print books versus electronic books. Is it okay to have people turn to electronic books because they are reading, or do you lose something, aside from a business, by having print books?
I think the important thing to keep in mind is it's not an either-or proposition. Just about everyone that I know who uses an e-reader or reads electronic books also still reads paper books. So I think you're going to be a reader, and the medium is different. I read both, and I find that my engagement with material is different when I'm reading off my tablet versus picking up a print book. And just like if I'm listening to an audio book, it's different. I might choose a title to listen to an audio if I don't want to be as engaged as I would be intimately with the page. But there's a certain, the Sue Graftons and the et cetera, since you used her before as an example, it's very convenient to have an e-reader. And certainly when you're traveling, I would much rather take 100 books in a tiny little package. You can have both.
Lindsay?
I agree with Meredith that I think people do read books still who also use e-readers. And the library has downloadable audio and e-books from our website through OverDrive. So people have free choices that they can make through the library's website.
Sandy, do you agree with electronic books?
you probably don't even have to ask me that.
Well, but I thought I should. I shouldn't want to toss out my thoughts on your feelings about it.
I understand what they both said. But there's something about watching a five-year-old carry a Wizard of Oz book across the room after you've read it to them and holding it close to them, thinking, the Wizard of Oz is in here. I can't imagine an e-book having that same feeling of taking the Wizard of Oz into their bedroom. And I think the other part of it is, I know in Donna and my's house, we have one room that I haven't read even a tenth of the books, but there are a lot of the more dense publications from that Britain put out in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and I just like them as books. I may never read them, but they're so precious, and they're so well bound, and they cost about 6 pence, and they spread books throughout the world in this wonderful way that you could have them next to you in your pocket. And an e-book, even if you can carry it on an airplane, it's very convenient, but it does not give you this same wonderful feeling of, here's this treasure in my pocket.
Lindsay, you mentioned audiobooks, and certainly people traveling by car, whether it's this weekend or other trips in the future. Suggested books that are specifically good for audio. Meredith?
I just listened to The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern, which is a wonderful book as well, but the audio version is read by Jim Dale, who many people recognize read all of the Harry Potter series, and he was meant to read magical things. His voice just brings this, and which is basically a fairy tale for adults. He brought an extra level to it, so I would definitely recommend the audiobook of Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern.
Anyone else have a suggested audiobook?
I only read one Patrick O'Brien book, but I listened to five of them on audiobooks going back and forth to work. And the reader, I'm going to forget his name, he died approximately the same time as the author of, as Patrick O'Brien did. And I listened to another of that series with another reader, and you could not listen to it. You simply was... He was so... just didn't get it across. Could I put my finger on what was wrong? No, but I knew that I could not listen to even one chapter, where the original man was so wonderful, and just as you say, he got this stuff out in ways that I certainly couldn't. I remember, I know it's very, very difficult to do, and to do well, it's almost impossible. I know John Grisham told me once that the hardest, he did one audiobook of his, and he said he'd never do it again. It was so hard.
I think I agree that the reader makes all the difference. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and my favorite thing about the library catalog is that we have the narrator in the catalog as well. So if you find a reader that you like, you can search for other books that they've read. And I found a lot of books that way that I wouldn't have normally picked up based on the author or the title. But simply because the reader reads it, I'll take a chance and I'll just listen to them read anything.
Oh, that's cool.
Right.
I found that for me, I guess I seem to like comedies being read more than, nonfiction, et cetera, personal preference only. But I find David Sedaris reading his own material to be actually some of the funniest stuff I've ever heard. And I realize that you can find him just about anywhere. I mean, you can go online and find him reading it, doing his work. But my suggestion for an audiobook would be just about anything by David Sedaris.
I wonder if you'd like Tina Fey's Bossy Pants then, which is a hilarious book. I don't know how it is as an audiobook.
I actually listen to the audiobook, and she reads it very well. There are certain things where she references the pictures in the book that are a little clunky in audio, but I thought I enjoyed it in audio version, yeah.
The print version was laugh-out-loud hilarious.
It was.
I tell you, one that... We used to have a bookshop in Chincoteague, and we would drive back and forth. And one of the books we listened to, it took three trips, was Moby Dick. And the reader was so sensational, I'm not going to remember his name, was so sensational, I found an absolutely brand new meaning in the book, and I liked it in a way that I never liked it in the print. It was just wonderful.
11:49 on the wake-up call. A few minutes left with our guests today, Sandy McAdams, Meredith Dickens, Lindsay Idison, all heavily involved in reading, making suggestions, talking about reading as a hobby, and for some, a career. Let me thank L. Oppelman Pawn Shop for their supporting us today, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of jewelry, including estate jewelry, hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and a variety of watches, Rolex, Tag, and others. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. Everybody pull out your sheet that Sandy McAdams was nice enough to give us. Four pages. Let's see. Can I read the top, Sandy? This is a list of mostly fiction books, which you may have read, you may know of, or you may have never heard of. I think they should at least be noted or better read. was dedicated to Joe Kling. I'm just going to pick a few off of each page, if that's okay.
I'll probably forget that I put them down.
Well, that's okay. But ladies, if you've read them, or you know wherever you stand with them, speak up. And Sandy, I'm going to ask you to give us a brief description of them, if you can. Please remember, we only had 9 minutes left.
Okay.
All right. Burnett, Secret Garden.
No.
Go for it, Lindsay.
Oh, I love that book. It's a must-read from childhood.
She had a visible reaction to that title.
Is that a childhood book?
Yes. Frances Hodgson Burnett. She wrote A Little Princess also, Victorian, but still speaks to children today, especially girls, of course. It's a very girl-oriented story.
And My Secret Garden. I would say that it's certainly a book for adults. I found it enchanting much more than I did as a child.
Churchill, My Early Life. I'm assuming, is this a biography of some sort about Winston Churchill?
It's about his early life, and he's a just super writer, and it's interesting. And as far as a prose stylist in the language.
So this is an autobiography.
Right. But I don't like to use that word because somehow I find autobiographies of current people just so obnoxious. But it was Winston Churchill, and he was in South Africa. Another one of his that is wonderful is The River War, and that's another one. He has this wonderful genius of writing well.
Let's see, what else is on this list?
Could I recommend The 39 Steps by Buchan?
Sure, please.
One of the first spy novels ever written, along with Eric Ambler's A Coffin for Demetrios. If you like spy novels, go back and read these early ones. They're still good.
All right, I think you could read almost any of his early novels, of his spy novels. He wrote lots and lots. He wrote at least five. Oddly enough, he was Governor General of Canada. And he wrote History of the World, First World War.
Speaking of spy novels, I see, and I always mispronounce his name, Le Carre's Russian House.
Yes.
And this is on Sandy McAdams, owner of 100,000 book Daedalus Bookshop, who, I don't know how many are on here, but I'm going to say that there's about 80.
I think about
80 to 100 books on this list, and you have to go to Daedalus Books to get your own copy from Sandy.
I will say the reason it's dedicated to Joe Kling is when I was an undergraduate in New York City, in Manhattan, I would come to his bookshop on Greenwich Avenue and being full of myself and that I had read everything. Every time I went into his shop, he would say, Sandy, what are you reading? I'd tell him, he said, well, you really should be reading L.P. Barbellion's The Journal of a Disappointed Man. And, of course, I hadn't read it. And you'd say, well, God, Joe, don't hurt me like this. I thought I'd read everything. And, of course, no one has read L.P. Barbellion's Journal of a Disappointed Man. But it's on the list because of Joe Kling. And so I kept thinking I should make a list like that. And a couple months ago, I typed it up.
You have McCoy. They shoot horses, don't they?
Yeah.
What's that about? I mean, you think you would immediately turn off people who love animals or horses?
That's about marathon dancing. And they made a movie of it.
Yeah. Jane Fonda.
There's also a brilliant movie of 39 Steps. Hitchcock movie.
Thompson, Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing is on here.
The first chapter of that, you just spit up if you're reading it. It's so funny.
And then you set it down, or then you keep reading chapter two?
No, I think the first chapter is by far the best chapter, but it's all very funny.
You have E.B. White, Essays.
He's just a master. He wrote kids' books, and he wrote novels, too. But his essays, you just couldn't change a word. He just is brilliant and so smart. And his wife, Catherine White, is known for her garden books.
11:55 here on the wake-up call. Let me remind you, you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. I want to make sure to get this part in. We sort of done this touch and go throughout the hour. But again, just for people who are just joining in, I want to make sure that we give out some of your favorites that you would suggest to somebody who's looking for, whether it's a print book, an e-book, a new book, an old book, just a couple of your personal favorites for somebody else who's getting ready to shop. Meredith, we'll start with you over in the corner.
One author I almost always recommend is David Mitchell. I think now I've read everything he's put out, and I'm consistently impressed with him. He wrote Cloud Atlas, The Thousand Autumns of Jakob de Zoet, and others, and I enjoy everything he puts out.
Lindsay?
I always recommend Time and Again by Jack Finney, which is a time travel book. It has mystery, romance, and has pictures of 19th century New York. Great summer read. I also, from this year, would recommend In the Garden of Beasts by Eric Larson, which is nonfiction about the American ambassador to Berlin in the 1930s and what happens to his family, especially his daughter, who is a social butterfly. True. This is true.
Sandy? We have your list here, but is there something, is there a book or two not on the list that you want somebody to get caught up in? You want me to just list a couple more off your...
I certainly think if you can do detective books, I know the owner of a New Dominion Bookshop said that she doesn't read British mysteries because she's saving them all up for her retirement. And they are just classic. And one American, you should absolutely read Rex Stout. He's unbelievable. He wrote 60 novels, apparently all with one draft. And Dorothy Sayers, British novels, one of my favorite. And Marjorie Allingham. These people will just delight you, not only with the stories, but they're just good at it. And if you're just good at it, that goes 90% in my book.
I want to take a moment and quickly, Corbin Addison, who was on the show back in early March, A Walk Across the Sun, which I found to be really... because the topic was of the nonfiction type about human trafficking, younger girl sex trafficking, that he had taken a nonfiction, a true acts and written it in a fictional type with fictional characters, I found to be really easy to read as someone who isn't necessarily a nonfiction reader. But a couple of my favorites to toss out there, Sandy, Kurt Vonnegut, obviously I decided I was going to read Kurt Vonnegut, and my first Kurt Vonnegut book I picked up in the stairwell at Daedalus Books. And then I continued to pick up other books there. But a couple of my specific favorites, one of the classics, Watership Down by Richard Adams. I think I was given that as about a 12-year-old and read it almost every year for quite some time. I'm fascinated by that book. And I mentioned this earlier. Shades of Grey, not 50 Shades of Grey, which I guess is the
book.
Top, right, which I think is the top, in the top 25 or top 10 right now. Shades of Grey by Jasper Ford, who's Welsh. The last name is spelled with two F's, F-F-O-R-D-E.
Yes, yep.
And the topic, it's not dystopian, but it is a sort of a future book in an awkward, weird social caste where your social placement in society is based on how much color you can see of different shades of red, green, blue. Think of the Roy G. Biv thing. I found that it's a little difficult in the first chapter because you're not sure what in the heck is he talking about. So I had to go back and read the first chapter again and then was fascinated for the rest. Anything anybody else wants to toss out in just our last 30 seconds?
Just keep reading. It's good stuff.
Come visit the library.
Yep.
And please support the library. There's been a loss of funding for Jefferson Madison Regional Library, and they deserve the funds and the number of visitors. Folks, thank you so much for being here. Remember what Memorial Day is for tomorrow, and we'll see you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.